Hey everybody, it's RJ from the Helping Friendly Podcast. We have a special episode for you today. One day away from Halloween, we were able to talk to someone who played a key role in the 2009 Halloween sort of mystery and reveal. If you all remember the albums that were getting murdered every day. And then at the end, right before they came out on stage to play Exile on Main Street, there was a 4 minute and 20 second exactly video that was played that showed all 99 albums, the artists, the songs. And we talked to the guy who made that happen, Justin Bolognino, who's a friend of the pod and has been on before. But this is a YouTube premiere video that by the time this goes up, you'll be able to click on the link in the show notes and watch the YouTube video, which is about 13 minutes long. This full conversation is about 25 minutes long. We wanted to put it out there so that everyone in the HF Pod family could hear the conversation and hear some of the stories that Justin tells that got cut out because of time. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Please click on the link in the show notes to see the video. It's really well done by producer Alan Berry, who's been doing a great job with videos for Osiris, including putting a lot of Tom's videos for Under the Scales together and out there in the world. Anyway, we'll hopefully see a lot of you in Vegas. We'll be doing a couch report from Vegas on Thursday. And otherwise, we really hope you enjoy this and hope this kind of amps up the anticipation of Halloween a little bit. So have fun, be safe, keep on rocking.
Hey everybody, I am here with a special guest, two special guests. One is Tom. Hi Tom.
Not so special, but hello, thank you.
And our other special guest is Justin Bolognino, who is the founder and CEO of Meta, Fish Fan, friend of ours. Hey Justin.
We can go with moderately special guest.
Moderately special guest. So the reason we're here, it's just about time for Halloween 2018, and for Osiris, we've been doing a Halloween contest. We're doing all kinds of cool stuff around Halloween. But we started talking with Justin a few months ago because Justin was involved in what I think was the most interesting Halloween probably ever. And you played a part in that. And we're going to talk a little bit about your part and how that all came together. But we'll talk about the lead up and all that. And I guess with people probably know by now, but we're talking about Halloween 2009 from Indio. And Tom's going to share some of his memories, and Justin's going to talk about his involvement. So let's maybe just dive right into Indio, because it was the first Halloween, obviously, of 3.0, but also the first Halloween since 1998. Seemed like they were probably pretty psyched to get back to what had been an amazing tradition for so long.
I have 76 memories that I want to share, but the most amazing part was, you know, this is a festival and a Halloween, which was probably why you said it was the most special Halloween. And I agree with that 100%. Plus California, which was unusual, plus 100 degrees plus in the sun, and just a beautiful grassy field in the middle of the desert. It was just a stunning place to arrive. I knew nothing about it. I know lots of people, you know, have seen, there's all kinds of festivals there and stuff, so some people were familiar with it. I was not, and I was just blown away, and everything about it was just incredible. And in a way, this was kind of like the makeup fest for Coventry.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so Justin, you're professionally, you create sort of events and experiences, I guess, to oversimplify what you do, but this was to get your take on like the experience leading up to the Halloween with the game, with the 99 albums and all of that. Tell us just from your perspective about how that kind of rolled out, I guess, and the importance of something like that, engaging fans and sort of creating an experience.
We should start with the marketing campaign for the festival, because that's really what's at the heart of this entire thing. And it's also something that Fish typically doesn't get enough credit for, like all other things. So I was watching the CNN The 90s show on Netflix the other night. And it's an entire hour on it must be 1,000 different bands they cover one by one, all the different genres. You know, the 90s was such an unbelievable hotbed of newly create new genres of music, just amazing stuff. And throughout that entire thing, literally Fish was not mentioned once. And they're cutting through bands and bands. Really incredible, you know, who sold probably millions of tickets. But anyway, also don't get appreciated enough for their marketing abilities. And this particular thing, this was 2009, right? So hopefully some folks out there remember, but there was an online campaign. So in every single day, it would refresh and do something new. So you had 99 different records kind of horizontally, and you could scroll through horizontally 99 of the best records of all time. And of course, all the records that everyone's always rumoring about being the one that Phish is going to play. Automatically, a dagger would fly towards, you know, six or seven of them a day, and they'd get daggered, and the blood would drip down, and then those records were out. And so, you know, from a marketing perspective, they had all of us hooked on this thing where every day we're going back to the website and refreshing, you know, to see which of the different records is going to get stabbed. At the time, I was representing and wholly obsessed with an audiovisual remix trio out of the UK called Eclectic Method. And so what Eclectic Method would do is they would take music videos, movies, TV shows, and they would chop it all up. And then they had DVD turntables, so they would cut and scratch all the videos and audio at the same time. These two things came together, and it's funny, I'm looking at that proposal that I sent over to the folks over at Phish, and it's presented October 22nd. And so what we did was we said, wait a minute, so what if we took all 99 different records and cut up all 99 different records and created a video? You know, the conditions of this pitch were also very important. The conditions were that at any given time, Phish had the right to just say no, including after delivery of the final assets.
The album game was happening, and that was really cool, and hopefully people will be able to see some clips from that while they're listening to this interview. But do you remember, like, did you just reach out because you're like, this should be part of the thing because of the album thing they're doing and because of this other influence you had? Or were you asked to, like, help in some way? Or was it more of just like a proactive pitch?
This was a 100% cold effort. Okay.
Nice.
This was awesome. I didn't know anyone. Our proposal was to cut 99 different pieces of content into this thing. And so basically, they were like, all right, go for it. And the terms of our contract are, if they don't take it, we get $1,000 kill fee, one whole $1,000. And if they take it, we are rich because we were given 2,500 whole dollars.
That's awesome.
That's $2,009, though, so it was a lot.
So you had 9 days to do this.
So, I mean, this was like a Herculean effort, right? We had this huge spreadsheet. We got everyone we could find to agree to help us. There was this huge list of all the 99 records, right? And then all the different ways that we could find content. We had people ripping DVDs. We had people ripping from YouTube. We had people TiVoing stuff. I mean, just anything we could to make it happen. And so then the next day is a test mix on the 23rd. So in 2 days, we sent, I think it was like one little chunk of it. And basically, this was kind of the Phish-like tension and release of the project the whole time. It was like we'd make a chunk, and then we'd send, you know, never did I get to interact with the band, of course. Like, there's always, the whole creation was done through the management.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd make a chunk, we'd send it over, they'd go, cool, keep going. And we go, but any feedback? And they just go, no, cool, keep going. And so we just kept going.
And you went to Indio. Did you guys have to do stuff on site, or was it just like a handoff and then hope it all goes well from their side?
The getting to Indio in and of itself was an entire other story. You know, is just one for the Phish record books. Phish is like always teaching you lessons, right? It's like the lessons of nature. And one of the lessons of nature that Phish taught us at this time was like, if you really, really badly want or are hungry for something, they're going to make it really hard for you to get that thing, right? And so with all this anticipation built up, you know, I flew out there. I think I had 3 copies of the DVD. Actually, check this out. Here's one of the DVDs. And we arrive, and the original dude, and I don't want to name him, but he...
Please name him.
this dude was just a total character. Had this big, long, like, Lincoln town car. Went to his place, and we're like, all right, let's go. Here we go. We're going to the fish show. It's their first Halloween. And all right, just a second. I got to go get my costumes. And then, you know, and then we get in the car finally. All right, we're going. Here we go. Let's go. And then, oh, by the way, I have to pick up my girlfriend at the airport. One thing after the next. It just led to us missing the first set.
So, Tom, was your experience getting to India similar, or did you have an easier time?
Because I know the laws of physics that Justin's talking about, I always kind of try to get to festivals and stuff a day early, and was rewarded with this sort of empty RV field and just one amazing huge bus on the middle of the field. And I'm like, oh man, my RV isn't here. And I walked up to it and it said Tom Marshall on the side. Yeah. And I was like, holy shit. And there was like no one had arrived yet. So there was like a taped bag of stuff on the door. And it was really cool. Swag, like it looked, you know, some shirts, some, it was just amazing stuff, and the RV keys. And I was right next to the stage pretty much. And my pass allowed me to go through the door right to the stage. And I thought, this is going to be super convenient because it's hot as fuck. And we're going to want to come back here for beers and air conditioning on the set break. Well, not so much. The security was so tight that all my friends had to walk a quarter mile to the main entrance and then a quarter mile back. It was like taunting. My RV was right there. And yet we had to walk all the way around. So by the time we got to my RV, we'd worked for those beers. And just let me just do a quick side note story about that. Imagine the heat. I mean, everything Justin said about the first set, it was the first set, even though you missed it, was amazing and very, very, very hot. Like that was kind of like overridingly hot, not quite oppressive, but hot enough that you needed a break. You needed shade and you needed liquid when it was over. And you know, like an oasis in the desert, my RV was waiting. And we had just made friends, my whole group, and I had like probably 10 people, just made friends. And I'm going to use monikers for their name, or not their real names in case they don't want to be. I hadn't asked them if they can be used in this story. So I'm going to call them Sam and Elizabeth, a married couple. Sam was
Sam and Elizabeth, yeah.
Sam's a special forces guy. And we had attributed tons of like assassinations to him and stuff, and like, you know, incursions and really like incredible stuff. But like all those special forces guys, he never said a thing. He never, ever, you know, ever bragged, never. So all the stuff that we said about him was all made up. Guys, Sam had this wife who I guess she got like caught inside her head in a weird way, you know, too many chemicals of some kind. So she made it back to the RV first. And we were all excited. And we walked as this big group to the RV, got there. You know, it was the biggest letdown because the door was locked. But we're like, oh, cool. Elizabeth is in there. Hey, Elizabeth. And we knocked on it and she's crying. And like, Elizabeth, the door's locked and you have the key. Remember, I gave you the key. And she's like, I know. And like, open the door. And she's like, I can't. She couldn't open the door. And Sam, meanwhile, standing in the back of the crowd, quiet, kind of smiling, like, now you guys get to see what I have to deal with. So finally, I just turned to Sam and said, get the fuck in there. And he looked at me. And I got to say, it was the most amazing thing. He like palm hit the screen and it popped off. Over the passenger side, he stepped on the wheel, slid the window, and was inside and opened the door. And I got to say, 7 seconds. It was the most, you know, he walked out with a big smile. And, and it was the most amazing Special Forces moment. But anyway, thank you, Sam and Elizabeth, for that incredible, incredible memory. And thank you, Fish, for that incredible bus and the incredible concert.
Yeah. So let's talk about the concert a little bit, because and I want to ask you, Tom, about the music, like the lineage with the Rolling Stones a little bit. But and I should have said before, we're going to see Justin's video at the end of this. So you'll be able to see that, people who are listening and watching. So they come out at the beginning of the second set, Justin, and that's when you're that's when your video starts, and hopefully we'll be able to get a couple clips of sort of the crowd reaction. But the way it played out going into the actual set was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. So what Eclectic Method did, it's not just a video cut, it's music. So you're talking about 99 completely different types of music, keys of music, rhythms, melodies, dynamics, all these different things that are at play. And to then make something not only musical out of that, but musical enough for Phish. Then we started on October 22nd, according to the timeline. It's completely miraculous. And I mean that capital M. And that's the way it felt. Like, we had this thing. And by the way, it was exactly 4 minutes and 20 seconds, not by design, but it's exactly the last note hits on 4:20 exactly. Thank you, Fishgrenicity.
Yeah.
That one. But still, I have these three DVDs and I roll up, and now it's Halloween day. I text with Colton, meet up with Colton. He comes out, you know, of where I wanted to be. And, you know, I give him the DVD. We shake hands and he says, all right, we'll let you know, and this is at like 2 p.m. and I'm, you know, all day refreshing, you know, like, you think it's going to happen? You think so? Not until 6 o'clock. I got the text from Colton. We watched it. It's on. So I didn't, in all that anticipation, I still did not know whether or not we would even be showing this thing until, what, 2 hours, 3 hours before it happened.
When you got that text, you must have been like, drinks on me, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, it's funny. It's like, with all that anticipation, my memory of that moment was not that. It was like, oh my God.
Here it comes.
This is going to happen? Oh, what if people don't like it? You know?
Right,
like,
right.
The whole thing. But yeah, and it, you know, I think this was a mandate on my behalf, was we had to start with Thriller. We had to, I don't understand. Just trust me. For this crowd, you got to start with Thriller. So we did it, and it opens up with a little slightly extended segment of Thriller. So when in fact, Thriller was playing, there was like it might have been a remix of Thriller, or actually Thriller was like playing, and then the lights come down, you know, people start cheering, and then the first thing you see is the very first scene in Thriller where, you know, he ducks away and comes back as the werewolf.
Yeah.
And the fucking place went absolutely insane. And you could tell they went insane, and you could hear it, and you can also, there's a video of it, you can hear people going, oh my God, it's gonna be Thriller, you know? So like one last little Fishian twist right before they came on where I think a lot of the people were convinced that it was going to be Thriller, and the whole Stones thing was just a fake out. For like 5 seconds, you know?
5 seconds they were able to hold on to that, and then it was like, you know, onto Stevie Nicks' face or whoever, the Clash.
So Tom, you obviously you grew up, you know, discovering a lot of this music, some of the artists we've talked about, and I think probably the Rolling Stones too. And you and Trey had discovered a lot of music together. Did the Stones fall into that category? Were they one like Yes and Genesis that were sort of on heavy rotation for you guys?
Oh yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, Yes and Genesis, because like I remember my high school with Trey being sort of focused on progressive rock, and for me it was that narrow focus. But Trey like had a super wide focus already, and no, he totally discovered the Stones and especially that album before me. But I remember him talking about it, and exactly the moment he discovered it, and it was, I think, in 10th grade at Princeton Day School. He went to a party where there was a senior who had this amazing stereo, put on the beginning of this album, and the first song is Rocks Off.
Yeah.
And it was a super loud stereo. It was just him and the guy who put it on in this room, and it was really loud so that the rest of the house could hear it. And Trey just sat there, didn't care about the party anymore. He was just like, holy shit, this is good. And then he said the horns came in after that second chorus, mm-hmm. and it knocked him out. And since then, he was just like, that was his favorite Stones album. And just that's when he kind of told me about it, and I just remembered it later and finally got into it probably years later, but always remembering that one, like, you know, keep that one. Trace said that's a good one, and kind of didn't really get into it for maybe 5, 6, 7 years after that.
And do you guys, I mean, Tom, maybe you can say first, what did you think of the set that Fish did? I mean, was it pretty special? I mean, compared to, you've seen every Halloween show, I think, right?
I've seen every Halloween show, and that one, you know, there's been special guests and stuff, but there was something so killer when walking up onto the riser behind the band, this horn section, you know, strode up, and then Fish very matter-of-factly kind of came out and just started playing. And it was like, it was really super surreal, especially after that video, because the end of the video, and Justin, you are credited for this, showed the most, and the Stones are cool without trying, but this had to be like the coolest footage of them right before walking on stage. And they're just so incredibly cool. And you know, it's like Keith and Mick, and they're walking and they're talking to people in the hall, and Fish kind of, you know, that was their walk onto stage, so to speak, because all of a sudden that Rocksoft started. And it was totally like the movie that Justin made that you're talking about right now completely worked as the intro for that. And the anticipation, even for people who didn't know that album, was off the charts. It just stunning and delivered that in many ways my favorite festival, and in many ways my favorite Halloween, at least top three of both of those.
Wow, that's so crazy to hear.
Yeah. And
well, that was Cocksucker Blues, which is very hard to find, but we knew we had to find it because that's the scene. It starts in their dressing room, and then they just slowly walk through kind of the back hallways, you know, the cinder block style back hallways. And there's people on road cases, and, you know, and they're saying, and they slowly walk out. And that isn't in our video. You see at the very end, you'll see Mick, and that's where it starts. But we cut that. That's the 4 minutes and 20 seconds, because they didn't want, in case it leaked, I think they didn't want it getting out. That's how protective they were.
They're definitely on there, though, right? The Stones, right at the end of the video.
Blues that's from. And then they walk onto stage, and this is all by design, and then Fish walks onto stage. But there was a certain soulfulness to it, like a delicacy that could at any time, you know, be corrupted, and it never was that night. I think that, to me, that was my biggest memory of that particular set. And also Sharon Jones was like there was like a giant pumping heart at the center of that stage in that woman.
There's another force, a force to be reckoned with on stage. Yeah, I agree.
So, guys, we're gonna watch this video and let people see it. And I guess before we do that, Justin, this is like really cool to hear the story behind this and hear your memories, Tom. But Justin, what was the like after this was over, or even looking back now, what were like a couple lessons that you learned or reflections back on this project?
Oh man, that is a big question. If you're going to do something of this stature, charge more than $2,500 for it.
And leave yourself more than 5 days to do it.
Yeah, I'm kidding. No, I mean, I think there's a thing that happens, right? And I see this enough with my career, and I'm where you can see it. You can see the final thing in your mind's eye, and it's real. Mm-hmm. And you have to just chase that thing no matter what. You just have to chase that thing. And, you know, these, like, the Eclectic Method guys, they were three British club kids. They hated Fish. You know, it was like Fish was like the completely not available to them at all. And they were still able to somehow make one of the fishiest possible things, you know, like there are forces out there. And I think, you know, the fish creates synchronicity. They've created a mechanism that generates synchronicity to a scale that is unthinkable. And I think it, like a black hole, it sucks everything, you know, around it in, into all these different layers of alignment, you know.
It's very well said. I totally agree with that. There's so many different ways of expressing what you just said, but it totally makes complete sense. It's so true. There's this amazingly, intricately woven, multidimensional web that if you get involved in any way with fish, you know, or doing something either, you know, with them or even getting to a show, you're involved in that web in some way. And everyone knows, every fan knows exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. I love that.
Not the least of which is the music, right? Like, I remember I knew a lot of those albums when they were going through the 99 album game, but there were several that I discovered because of that. And I've been discovered so much music because of Fish. I'm sure everyone listening like can identify with that in some way. It's pretty crazy. It's a big force of nature. We're lucky to be a part of it. So all right, let's play the video. We're gonna let people watch that. And Justin, just want to say thanks for coming on, sharing this, and putting this together, and making it a part of what Tom said was, you know, one of the best Halloweens ever.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Justin, and thanks, RJ.
Of the mambo, Papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I start banging off the Congo. Every monk like to be in my place instead of me. I'm the king of bongo, baby. I'm the king of bongo, bongo.